Welcome to Reach Deep.
1-4.
Here's Hughes, top of the point, shoots and scores! Come all without, come all within. You've not seen nothing like the mighty Quinn.
The People's Show.
If you turn it up, I'll turn it up. You know what I mean? We'll turn it up a notch.
On the radio home of your Vancouver Canucks.
Here's JT Miller down the right wing into the LA zone. In front for Pettersson, he scores! Elias Pettersson to the rescue for the Canucks.
Sportsnet 650.
Unfriggin' believable. Unbelievable.
Broadcasting live from the 650 studios, here are your hosts, Dan Riccio and Randy Janda.
Happy Friday, Reach Deep Nation. Yes, it is the People's Show. Here with you for the next 2 hours on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, at Dan Riccio underscore and at Randeep Janda. That's where you can connect with us on Twitter. Also use the hashtag ReachDeep or text us via the text line 650-650. Coming up on today's show, Week 7 in the NFL started last night and continues on Sunday. We'll talk to Frank Schwab about that. Also, our fill in the blank. We got to make fun of Daniel Jones. The Daniel Jones run was blank. Get in on the text line with your answers for that. We'll bring some of ours later on this segment. Also, our Friday Hockey Insider, David Pignota of the Fourth Period, will be joining us at 2 o'clock. Randeep, what's going on?
What's going on, Reach? It's a shortened version of Reach Deep, but we got a jam-packed show ready to go, and it's ugly outside, so stay indoors. If you're driving, that's cool, but stay indoors. Listen to us. We're gonna create some sunshine on your miserable Friday afternoon.
At the very least, we're going to try and make you laugh a little bit. Maybe you can, too, with us. 650-650 on the text line. So, yes, things are kind of slowing down. I mean, Jake Virtanen signs his contract yesterday. Want to touch on that and something that Jim Benning was quoted as saying in Ian McIntyre's piece at sportsnet.ca. But a few news and notes from Elliot Friedman and the NHL's GM meetings commencing today. And couple of interesting thoughts from Elliot, just to look over and really see what's going on with the NHL as we look ahead to next season. But as of right now, Jan 1 remains the target date. I know you have kind of mentioned that Jan 1 seems optimistic.
Ambitious, from what I've heard, is that January 15th or past the middle of January is what players have been told as, you know, maybe an area to be a time to be ready for. But January 1st, okay, let's give the NHL the benefit of the doubt on this one. Yeah. But it seems like that's just a start date, initial foundation of that's where all things start. So as of right now, that they're sticking to that.
And the NBA has said December 22nd for their start date. So that might have light a fire under the ass of the NHL to be like, okay, we might want to figure this out here. But more wrinkles for the NHL with the seven Canadian teams, obviously, than the NBA has. Something you talked about a lot on Twitter as well, Lake Louise as a potential starting point. We know the Winter Classic has been postponed.
Yep.
Jan 1 is the day that the NHL owns, and we watch the outdoor game. What better place to start, since you can't have fans anyways, than Lake Louise? But Lake Louise has been taken out of the equation after a site check proved it was not possible or not wouldn't work for the NHL, but they are still looking into other options.
And I'm holding out for this, Reach. Once I tweeted that out a couple of weeks ago, people came with other suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Shannon, who's the producer on the TV side of Canucks broadcast, mentioned Rideau Canal in Ottawa.
That one.
Central Park in New York could be another option.
Yep.
You know, so there are other options that might be a little bit better suited from a technological point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, if it's New York, you know NBC is going to be all over that. So there are other options. I'm still keeping the hope alive.
Wouldn't Lake Louise be like minus 50 degrees, though? Like,
be perfect. I don't know if like disrupting nature to bring all that stuff there was good for the animals in Lake Louise in that area, or Banff for that matter. So maybe that's a good thing that it's not on the radar anymore.
So those are the two things regarding the NHL's return to play. Elliot also saying that the GMs will now get in touch with the NHLPA's return to play committee and take discussions further there. The other really interesting point here, some GMs are looking for a change to the draft lottery system. The NHL has asked for specific proposals as to what they would like it to look like, but this comes after the New York Rangers are gifted the number one overall pick.
And we've heard the complaints before as well. Brian Burke has been not a fan of this current system where, you know, you could be a lottery team and be the 10th worst team in the league and end up winning.
Look, the system is set up for those that are in a real rough period. They get the benefit of hitting the home run at the draft, not for those that, you know, just miss the playoffs and end up winning the first overall pick like we've seen with New Jersey and New York in recent years.
We've seen that before, but there's got to be a fine balance, though, because you have to make sure that teams aren't tanking on purpose.
Like, you don't want Connor McDavid all over again.
Yeah, you don't want that whole Buffalo fans cheering for losses against Edmonton or whatever. Like, you don't want that. So what does that happen? If it's not the number, like, you know, 15 teams, is it 10? Is it 7 to 8?
Right.
I think if there's 5 teams that are, you know, in the lottery, that's still going to promote tanking. There's going to be a lot of teams that shut down guys as the season goes on. Reach, maybe that number of teams in the lottery are 8.
Yeah.
Right? You cut it down from half the league, essentially, down to maybe the 8 worst teams, because that way, at least you have an incentive to stay relevant, try to win games, because there's less of a chance that you're going to win that first overall pick. But I don't like the idea of 5 or 6 teams only, because then, as we saw in Vancouver that one year where it seemed like everybody was getting shut down at the end of the year, every single player,
yeah,
and it was a race to the bottom. Nobody wants to see that.
No, nobody does. And yes, like, you can tank as expertly as the Detroit Red Wings had this year and still end up with the 4th overall pick. Heck, Ottawa didn't even have their first overall pick the year before. They were god-awful, and their pick landed at number 4 with Colorado, where they selected Bowen Byram. But Ottawa was by far the worst team in the league, did not win the draft lottery that year. One thing I find funny about this, we like putting the Canucks spin zone on it, and I know Canucks aren't really expected to be a lottery team for the next little while with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes leading the charge. But it's kind of funny that the NHL, like, moved away from, you know, the previous format.
Oh,
where
you're putting your tinfoil hat on right now.
As soon as, like, the Canucks go into a rebuild, change the rules. Change. 15 teams got a chance at the first overall pick. As soon as the Canucks finish up their rebuild, it's like, we got to go back. I think we should go back to, like, the top 3 teams that have the best chance.
Okay, that's a very... Remember I was talking about your Vancouver card getting prepped and sent... Like, you're getting that much closer. If you're coming up with conspiracy theories like that... You're more of a Vancouverite than I thought you were.
I'm just throwing it out there, man.
That's
I'm not
a deep
saying
reach.
Conspiracy theory, but it is a pretty happy coincidence, you know, after the Canucks spend years dropping places in the draft lottery.
Or, here's another idea.
Mm-hmm.
The Ilitch family is just better at lobbying than the Aquilini family. Honestly.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it comes down to. Hockey Town knows how to win an argument in the league office. Better than the Canucks ownership, because you're right. Somehow it registered with the league all of a sudden. And is it the teams that suck right now that aren't in a position, you know, should be in a position to win the lottery? Have those ownership groups just said, all right, enough's enough. Maybe that's what it is, Reach.
It's Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. So that's the latest from the NHL on that front. We'll get back into that with David Pignota coming up after 2:00. So, I wanted to bring this up on the Canucks.
Okay.
And it's, I guess, kind of a topic that has been apparent. And it stems from the Jake Virtanen signing yesterday, but is more of a philosophical question around this current management regime. And this quote from Jim Benning, an IMAX piece at Sportsnet.ca, stuck out to me, and it surrounds Jake Virtanen and the polarizing figure that he is, Jim's comments to us about Jake's playoff play, But here's the quote. It can be frustrating, but I've just seen too many examples where if you're not patient with those guys and move them on, he ends up being that power forward that scores 25 goals for somebody else. We've put a lot of time into his development, and we're hoping he can continue to mature and get better and be that player for us. End quote. Now, why does that stick out to me? And it's not so much with Jake. We talked a lot about Jake. I mean, the contract is fine for Jake. At that number, it is easily comparable to some others and maybe even better than some others around the league for what Jake has provided to this point in his career. But Jim Benning, like, if you're ever going to make trades, if you're ever going to, like, you've got to know when to give up on a player. You can't always just be living in this fantasy land of, well, I don't want to trade that guy because if he ever hits his ceiling, it's going to look terrible on us. Like, you can't realistically GM your team if you're always going to be living in fear of the player you're moving on from is going to hit their absolute ceiling as a player.
Okay, that quote that you mentioned there, that has Canucks fan base written all over it. The Cam Neely example is the one we always think about.
100%.
And it's okay for fans to think that. But for the GM, it opens your eyes a little bit to say, okay, wait a second. But, Reach, where this team is at right now,
yep,
taking risks, especially at the wing position, they're not. You can't necessarily do that. You need to have a baseline. You need to have a guy that's going to give you results. And 18 goals. Listen, we talked about Jake Virtanen and what he is and what he could be.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty honest on what I think he is. But he's a guy that can score goals. On the wings, the Canucks don't have many of those guys right now. So while I understand taking risks, you have to take them as a GM, that risk right now for that player is a tough one. And you have to have a baseline. If you're trying to win games, if you're trying to score goals, whether it's Virtanen or dealing another player off the roster, you have to think about how it will affect your team in the here and now. The expectation is that this team gets better here and now.
You can't look at every move in a vacuum, though, Randeep. Like, it just feels like everything about, you know, the way that this team goes about the way that it does things is like it looks at the next step. You're never looking 3-4 steps down the road. You know, Chris Tanev, okay, doesn't re-up here in Vancouver, and nobody realistically, other than the Calgary Flames, likes that contract that he signed with them at 4 years, $18 million. But, you know, why wasn't a trade? You could see this happening for years with Chris Tanev, where his number wasn't going to make sense. And who wants to tie into an ultra stay-at-home defenseman who blocks a ton of shots and has a injury history that is more than 3 pages long? You're not going to want to commit to that guy. You could see that coming through the lens many years ago. But they didn't realistically approach a trade for Chris Tanev at any point during his contract, even if he was in rumors all the time. Brandon Sutter, you could see that mistake early on in that contract. Why didn't you move on from it? Because you're too worried about how it would look that you called this guy a foundational player and he didn't turn out that way? Well, guess what? Everybody's hammering for you anyways on that front.
Well, okay. With the past, Radim Verbata, Dan Hamhuis, I can agree with that. You had a chance to move those guys when the team wasn't very good, and you didn't do that. But since then, Chris Tanev, Brandon Sutter, Alex Edler, there are people saying, hey, let him walk. If you want to be a competitive team, you need to have certain number of these guys on your roster. So it's easy for us to say, let Chris Tanev go. Troy Stetcher will step up. Are you so sure about that? When you are expected to be competitive and trend towards being a winner, that's what ownership wants. We know that. Jim Benning has to make sure that, listen, you've got the baseline there. And those guys were the baseline. There was not much behind it. So that risk is tougher. For a GM on the clock right now, if the Canucks take a step back next year, or if they miserably fail, we'll be asking questions about Jim Benning's job next year. We will be. So how many risks are you going to be talking about, or how many risks are you taking when you know that's the reality? We had a team make the playoffs this year, but in December, a couple of months before that, there were texts telling us, fire the coach. Like, this is Vancouver. This isn't fantasy land, where if you lose, you're gone. And that's why being a risk averse, yeah, it's the thing right now, because you have to be competitive. This isn't 2 years ago.
Yeah. Look, I want, like, a GM's got to be risk averse at some points. Other than the JT Miller trade, what big risk move has Jim Benning made in the last couple of years? Everything the Canucks have required has been maybe a draft pick going the other way, signings in free agency. They're carried by guys that they've collected through the draft. I'm not saying that as a blemish on Jim Benning's resume. I mean, he's hit some massive home runs in the draft with Hughes, Pettersson, and Brock Besser. But you've got to be able to hit in other spots. And JT Miller was a big hit. That was a big swing. But it's felt like, to me, ever since the Goodbranson for McCann and a first trade, or McCann and a pick trade, you know, they've never really committed to taking risks in trade. Tanner Pearson for Eric Goodbranson? I mean, that was a home run. Everybody and their mother could see that Eric Goodbranson was not working out in Vancouver. That was a gift given to you after you doubled down and gave Goodbranson a 3-year extension when there was nothing to suggest that he deserved it. And more recently, the Nate Schmidt trade, a home run for Jim Benning. But that, again, is a no-doubt trade. You're helping a team out of a cap situation. This landed into your lap. Good for Benning that he positioned himself to be there for that move. But realistically, where are the risk-taking? Where's the risk-taking from Jim Benning? When is he going to make hockey trades that can benefit this team? One-for-ones where you're saying, I got to take a chance. You're not getting anything unless you give up something.
Okay, a risk for the sake of taking a risk and changing it up is not – is not okay. If Jim Benning makes that move and it fails miserably, we're the exact same people. You're going to be the exact same person saying, why would you make that move when there's no depth there? Why would you trade that player on the right side of defense, Chris Tanev last year, when there's nobody to replace him? So taking a risk for the sake of taking a risk, I'm not buying that. Like, ideally, you take those risks when you have depth. When you have a Thatcher Demko, you can start exploring a Jacob Markstrom deal. I don't think that was the case this year. Markstrom was their MVP. So anybody saying, hey, you should have made that deal. No, you don't deal your MVP. But from a position of depth, risk makes sense. The right side of defense did not have any depth to it outside of Chris Tanev. Brandon Sutter, listen, for a good part of the last 2 years, Reach, there was no market. We can tell ourselves otherwise, but we'd be lying to ourselves. So risks on those two players, they didn't exist. Chris Tanev was a player that they needed, and really the best market for Chris Tanev was like 3 years ago. He was still an important player at that point. You need a baseline. When you have an ownership group that wants to win, that wants to make money, wants to have playoff games, it's the reality of the situation. So I'm not trying to excuse Jim Benning. He's had plenty of risks in his free agent signings. We're still seeing those play out in Vancouver to this day. But from a trade perspective, unless you have depth within the organization at a given position, a risk for the sake of taking a risk is just stupid.
This text, it's ridiculous and weak argument to say they should have traded these veterans at the deadline because they'll walk. Well, without those veterans like a Tanev, they would not have gone as far in the playoffs. Unsigned texter. I hear that. My bigger point is you could see the writing on the wall with Tanev for years. There was a time and a place to make that move. Canuck should have made it then.
Okay, but at one point, 2 or 3 years ago, he was being called the most underrated defenseman in the NHL, or at least in that discussion. In the span of a year and a half, that changed. This year was the fall off. This year. It wasn't last year. 2019-2020 was the fall off. So let's not speed up the timeline here. He went from being arguably the most underrated player in the NHL to all of a sudden a player that looked like he was nearing and at 30 years old. So It didn't happen that slowly. It happened kind of quickly, Reach.
The People Show. It is Dan Riccio and Randy Janda. Let's bring in Leaf hater Steve on the phone line. What's going on? You want to talk for Tannen?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I think Benning had no choice but to try to sign Vertanen. I mean, you figure that Markstrom walks, Tanev walks, Toffoli walks, and then you don't do it with Stetcher. He signs elsewhere. And basically, if he turned around and didn't sign Vertanen, that's five players that are off on other teams, and there's a good chance that three of those players have great years this year, and he's just going to look even worse than he did before. So basically, I think he was just into a corner where the numbers had to work, but he had to try to not give up on at least one of those players and the other four just walking.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Steve. It's a good point. You know, my thought isn't necessarily just on Vertanen. Like I said yesterday, and like we talked about yesterday, now this is a good deal. He's going to get a chance at the top six. Comparison to other players around the league, it's fine. But, you know, the bigger question is, you know, why are you in this spot where you haven't been able to, you know, have Toffoli and still bring back Vertanen, right? Why did you have to make a choice one or the other when you could clearly see that both of these guys right now would be a fit on your roster, make you better long-term to have both of them and not have to choose just one? And that, you know, that is where it goes back to. You know, you're never going to make a trade if you're too busy worrying if Olli Juolevi is ever going to hit his potential as the fifth overall pick. Like, everybody knows it's not going to happen anymore. You know, are you going to put him in a trade or not? Vertanen, yeah, it was in the Arizona trade. He was in the Arizona trade a couple of weeks ago with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Arizona was like, you know, like, it's pretty clear to everyone what you're going to get in trade for Vertanen right now is either a mid-round pick or it's going to be a one-for-one type of deal where you're taking your guy and you're saying maybe there's a better fit with somebody else around the league. You've got to take a risk at some point. If you've gone this far down the road and you're just saying, well, I mean, we've invested this much. Let's see if it works. You know, like, I'd like to think that there's more of a thought process here other than that.
There has to be, but there are given results. And we talked about it. I've kind of talked about how I want to see a larger sample size from a Jake Vertanen in the top six to really have any belief that that can be a real position for him. But when you're a GM on a team that is expected to do something, Rich, because we talk about that Minnesota series, we talk about St. Louis, and heck, we talk about what they did against Vegas, things are expected now. That risk from a GM at this point, or even with Chris Tanev, even last year, you know, there was the argument of, hey, if he's not coming back to Vancouver, do you start exploring a deal with him? We were talking about that prior to the trade deadline. There was discussions on Vancouver Sports Radio about that. You can't do that. You can't do that because you're in it now. You're not on the outside looking in anymore, Reach. You're in it. You need a baseline. So while Jake Vertanen, as an example, those 18 goals, you can call them empty goals all you want. They're still goals.
Yeah.
And if he's off your roster, you're putting a question mark in there. An Athanasiou or a Duclair or somebody else you pick up, and maybe they have results. But if they don't, you're gone. You're done. So I understand risk. But in this case, this is not a GM that has many years of tenure left. Like, this is go time for Jim Benning, right? The playoffs already, you know, showed that this team should be in the discussion over the next couple of years. Not to win a cup, but they got to be competitive. So that's why taking risks for the sake of taking risks at this point in Jim Benning's tenure, I don't think that's a smart career move.
It is Reach Deep. Dan Riccio and Randy Janda. Lots of texts coming in. JB has made great trades. You can't say all good trades are expected, but his risky one is bad. Reach, you forgot his attacks from gambling on his UFAs. You have no idea. Ivan in Richmond, Jim Benning is, in my humble opinion, one of the worst GMs in the NHL. We've got lots coming in on this. We'll keep this conversation going through the day. Coming up next, though, we've got Frank Schwab getting in on the NFL. Week 7 is upon us, and we'll keep this Canucks conversation going because it looks like we've fired up the masses here ran deep with our debate today on the People's Show Reach Deep. So on the NFL note, though, we do have our fill in the blank. I do want to get in one. We got to have some fun here on today's show rather than just yell at each other, right? It is a Friday after all. Randeep, the Daniel Jones run was blank. Answer it on Twitter and at 650-650 on the text line. What you got?
All right, I'll start it off. The Daniel Jones run was Jones's legs pulling a Roberto Duran. They gave up on him. They didn't. No mas. No more, they said. No more. Just quit on him. That was hilarious. And it kind of reminded me doing like hill sprints.
Yeah.
Where your legs feel like jelly. That's pretty
much. This sounds really personal to you right
now.
Yeah,
I did it a couple of days ago. It was not fun. I was rolling down the hill, as a matter of fact.
And just like your legs gave out. You're like, ah, okay. Never mind. I'm good. 80 yards is enough. I've got one. One of my all-time favorite Monday Night Raw moments. The Daniel Jones run was like that time Jeff Hardy almost beat Undertaker in a ladder match.
Oh, you son of a bitch, Taker!
Okay, don't lie. You chose that answer for Jim Ross and nothing else, really.
So good, man. It's so good.
I was actually...
But Jeff Hardy is right there. It's like, oh, come on. You can do it. It's like, you know, it's so obvious. Like, just grab the thing. I know you can grab it. Stop acting. Just like Daniel Jones. It's right there. The touchdown's right there for you. Why you... No, don't do it. Oh.
Somebody has to put the Jim Ross voice over Daniel Jones' run. Josh Elliott Wolf, can you do that in your spare time today?
It'll be my task of the day.
There we go. Somebody's got to do it.
You can
He's got a family.
You can do it, kid. No, you can't. All right, coming up, Frank Schwab will continue this, his take on the Daniel Jones run and the NFC least race. It is Reach Deep, the People's Show, Sports at 650.
Now more of Reach Deep with Dan Riccio and Randy Janda.
Hand off. Nope, Jones is going to keep it. Jones is going to run it. Jones across midfield. It's a foot race. Can he go all the way? Daniel Jones to the 20, and he stumbles, and he falls down at the 10.
The turf monster got him. Stumbling, rumbling, bumbling, and he falls down.
I just tried to run faster than I was running, and got caught up. So. We finished the drive, scored a touchdown, so that was a relief to me for sure.
Sometimes everything is wrong. This song couldn't be more perfect. Well done by Josh Elliott Wolf spinning the dials today. Is this the song just gives the overall feel of being a Jets or a Giants fan right now, doesn't it?
A lot of pain. What a hurt.
It's even worse than being a Vikings fan, right, Josh?
You're not wrong. And that's pretty bad.
Nice threads, though. You can't see Josh Elliott Wolf. He's wearing a Hartford Whalers jersey today.
Yep.
That brightens up your day, even when you're listening to the song.
Is Mike Liut on the back?
Not yet.
Josh has no idea who that is. He's like 13 years old. Come on. Surprised he has that jersey.
Yes, the Giants blew an 11-point lead with about 5 minutes left. Thankfully, though, like I don't think Daniel Jones would have been ever able to live that down if they didn't end up scoring a touchdown on that drive. Like if he throws a pick on the next play.
Or better yet, he fumbles on that play.
Yeah, or it ends in a missed field goal or something ridiculous. Then... I mean, it would really last in NFL infamy, and it probably will anyways, but at least they still put a 7 on the board after that.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not a butt fumble or a Patrick Steffen missed net that leads to a goal the other way. Like, it's not that bad. Yeah. It's tier 2 embarrassment. It's not tier 1. Nothing, in my opinion, beats the butt fumble when you go straight into the offensive lineman's ass with your face.
Also right? another great Jets moment.
Great Jets moment. Great New York moment, really. But it was still pretty damn sweet.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of us. Like, we all felt like we were there. We've all been there, right?
Yep.
And I heard Scott Rintoul's show earlier today and people texting in and their moments.
Yeah.
Their Daniel Jones moment. We all have one. Mm-hmm. Whether it was, like, U11 soccer for me or baseball or last week.
Yep.
It was a human moment. And it's good to know that rich guys that make a lot of money, they have those moments, too.
Sixth overall pick in the NFL still has those moments as well. Yeah, I mean, I think we've all had those moments. And that's why our fill in the blank today is what it is. The Daniel Jones run was blank. My other input on that was just the idea that the Daniel Jones run was like me going to a bachelor party in Jamaica at age 33. And thinking I could last the whole week.
That's,
no, that was me like on Wednesday of that week.
I was going to say, that's after you after two drinks. What are you talking about? You're stumbling and falling all over the place after,
Savage.
After a couple of vodka sodas reach.
That's I will not confirm or deny. Coming up now, our next guest, Frank Schwab, Yahoo NFL. Thanks for this, Frank. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're doing awesome. Having fun at Daniel Jones's expense from last night. That's pretty much everybody.
One of the plays of the year. You can kind of see it coming too. All of a sudden, you're like, it's like happening in slow motion where he's just kind of. Somebody put it like, you know, you put the treadmill on the highest speed and you just like just fall out from under you because it's too fast. Like, that's exactly what it looked like. And hey, it's kind of. Sums up the Giants season, doesn't it?
It's a great clip, though, but it really gave me an appreciation for the butt fumble and how that one still has legs, really. You know, like, how great is moment when we're thinking about it almost 10 years later, and it's still great? It really gave me an appreciation for that moment because it still lives.
Absolutely, it does, yeah. There's a few, Jim Marshall running the wrong way, you know, it plays like that, you just don't forget very often, and, you know, that one, yeah, I think we'll be talking about that one for a really long time. It's funny because, like, on that play, Daniel Jones was running basically as fast as Tyreek Hill's fastest time this year. He's a superb athlete. He's really, really good. And he just, I don't know what happened. I think it resonates because it's nice to know that even though these guys are elite athletes, sometimes they're like us.
Frank Schwab, our guest. Yeah, it's so true. And it also sums up the NFC East race pretty well and how embarrassing it is right now. The Eagles, you know, they're now, you know, they've got another win under their belt. Are they the favorite in this division from what we've seen from the Cowboys and how they just like it look like in total turmoil right now?
I guess so. I mean, it's the Eagles for, you know, 55 minutes last night were losing to the New York Giants at home. It's, I don't know, like, even how to, you know, because people ask, well, who do you think is going to win East? I don't even know how you pick any of these teams. How could you feel remotely confident with any of these four teams? They're all terrible. They're all just, you're trying to pick the least terrible of the group. I've said the Cowboys just because at least I know they have playmakers on offense. I don't know if they got the offensive line and, you know, Andy Dalton's obviously a downgrade, but at least they have brand name guys to get the ball to, and Eagles have basically nothing. I can't sit here and tell you this is the strength of the Philadelphia Eagles, and the same goes obviously for New York and Washington. I don't know. It's just a bad, bad division, and I think seven easily wins it. And you know what? We seriously might be sitting here in January watching a 6-10 football team hosting a playoff game.
Well, how do you feel if you're a team in the NFC West, which is supposed to be the toughest division in football, or among them anyways? And if you're a Niners team or a Rams team that is fighting for your playoff lives, and then you see a 6-win team potentially make the playoffs, Frank, that's pretty embarrassing for the league.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I get it. I don't mind division champions getting the playoff spot. I really don't. I think that if you're going to have divisions, it needs to count for something. It needs to matter. So giving them a playoff spot is just fine. What really bothers me is the hosting. It just is so unfair. It's so unfair that we're going to see potentially, you know, you could see, let's bring up the Rams. The Rams could go 11-5 and have to play on the road at Dallas wildcard weekend if they're 6-10. I mean, this is not outlandish. It's not a crazy scenario. This actually could happen. And it's just so easy for the NFL to change that. I don't know why they won't. I don't know why they're so stubborn. It's such an easy rule change to say, you could be in the playoffs, say, hey, good for you, but you're going to have to go on the road every week because we're not giving you a home game. It'd be so easy to change that. And if anything, I hope that the 2020 NFC East, sometimes we need something really extreme to happen for the NFL to finally change rules. If there's one legacy the 2020 NFC East might have, it's that we might get some rule tweaks with who gets into the playoffs and who gets to host home games.
I like that we still have like such a polarizing opinion of it seems like the football world does of Carson Wentz. You know, is he bad? Is he good? I mean, what's he supposed to do with the cast of characters he's working with? And also just like the flex by the Eagles management to go through this every year. Like, hey, can we just keep trying to find wide receivers off the street to work with our high end quarterback that we drafted at the top of the draft? Like, this isn't a new situation, but how do you evaluate Carson Wentz with the task that he has every week of throwing to guys named Joe Smith, it seems like?
Right. And if you just, boy, in back-to-back drafts, they easily could have drafted DK Metcalf and Chase Claypool or T. Higgins. Instead, they draft J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who I think we all can probably assume is not going to be very good, and Jalen Reagor, who might be great, but we haven't seen him yet because he's hurt. So it's one of those, it's very slight in the NFL. Sometimes just one mistake can really haunt you. Like, imagine Carson Wentz with DK Metcalf right now. I mean, it would be a game changer. The thing about Wentz is it's weird to me because any evaluation of him, anything, good, bad, whatever, the excuse makers, whatever, we all come back to the same thing. Well, his teammates stink. Okay, well, that's fine, but there still needs to be something there. He can't be throwing blind interceptions into the end zone to James Bradbury like he did last night. That's on him. And look, I'm a big Carson Wentz guy. I thought 2017, you know, he should have been MVP that year. He got hurt. I thought he had a fine rookie year. I really, really liked him. And it's just kind of stagnated for him, maybe because of injuries, maybe because of guys around him. I just worry about him kind of falling into bad habits because those are hard to break. What if you're a quarterback and, you know, you're throwing off your back foot because you're getting rushed every time, and you're making bad decisions because you're trying to force things to receivers that, you know, probably shouldn't be starting for an NFL team. I think that carries over, and that really can screw you up as a quarterback long term. So I hope we don't get into that spot with Carson Wentz, and I really, truly hope that the Eagles put some guys around him and finally hit on some draft picks so we can get a clear evaluation of Carson Wentz. He could be a top five quarterback in this league or a bottom five quarterback in this league, and I'm not sure anybody knows the answer to that right now.
All right, Frank, we've talked a lot about some bad teams. Let's talk about some good teams as well now. In the AFC, it seems like the Chiefs are in tier one. They are the elite team. Who is their biggest threat in that conference?
I still think it's the Ravens. I really do. I look, the only thing that the first 6 weeks of the season have proven to me, Ravens-wise, is that they can't beat the Chiefs. Okay, well, them and 30 other teams. The Chiefs are really, really good. And the fact that they got blown out by the Chiefs in that big game, so many people gave up on the Ravens. Oh, they're not that good. They're really good. Their other games, I think they've won every other game by double digits. They just added Ngakoue from the Vikings, so they have even more on defense now. I think they're playing a certain style where instead of, you know, the last couple of years when it was just, let's run Lamar, run, 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 I think this year they came into the season saying, if we have games where we don't need to give him the ball 15 to 18 times, let's save that. Let's save that for when we play the Steelers, for when we play the Chiefs, for when we get into a playoff game. I think the Ravens are just as good as I thought they were before the season when I picked them to win the Super Bowl. I think they could still do that. They just need to play a very, very good game against the Chiefs. They can't fall behind. They're a team that just can't play from behind. It's not their strength. They need to get up on you and kind of lean on you and beat you that way. So I still think the Ravens are there. And then, you know what? There's some other teams. The AFC is loaded. The AFC is really, really good this year. You can make a case for the Steelers and their balance. I think their offense-defense balance is really, really good. I think the Titans are legit. Once you wrap your head around the fact that Ryan Tannehill is probably a top-10 quarterback in this league, and I know that sounds weird and people still don't believe it, but it's true. Ryan Tannehill has now, for a full calendar year, played remarkable football, and I think he's deserving of any praise he can give him. I think he's proven himself. And then, you know, there's other teams. If the Bills could put together a run, I still think they have that in them. I think, you know, a team like the, you know, we saw the Raiders. The Raiders under Tampa, they beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead. There's a few teams like that. The Browns, I think, if everything goes right for them one game, they would have the talent to make a run. So AFC is just absolutely loaded. But, yeah, it's the Chiefs. To me, it's the Ravens after them, and everybody else kind of can do it, but a lot of things have to go right.
Steelers and Titans battle of 2-5-0 teams on Sunday. You know, it's funny you mention that about Tannehill, and it's just, you know, we get so married to our first impressions of players sometimes,
right,
that we just, you know, as good as Tannehill has been, it seems like so many of us, and I myself included, where we're just like, I see it, but I don't know. Like, I still remember Miami Dolphin Ryan Tannehill, and I can't get over that.
Right, we're waiting for the clock to strike midnight. I get it. Like, it's weird. It's a strange story. We are used to, hey, you are who you are as a quarterback in the NFL by your third, fourth season. I mean, people are already talking about, you know, Daniel Jones, like he's terrible. Well, it's a few games into his second year. That's how impatient we are with quarterbacks now. And for a guy like Tannehill, this is unprecedented. It's basically the Rich Gannon you know, career path, where he gets into the right situation with the right offensive coach. It sure helps to have Derrick Henry behind him in the backfield. And he just comes alive, and he still has the physical talent to match up with the lessons he learned. You know, and Adam Gase didn't break him, I guess, as he's broken plenty of other players. Ryan Tannehill is still a talented guy who was just stuck with a bad coaching staff. And now he's on a really good team, really good coaching staff. And he's blossoming. And, you know, got Jim Plunkett did this, and Steve Young did this, where you get in your 30s and you just find the right situation, and it all clicks. And I know people don't want to just admit they were wrong or admit that they're seeing somebody legitimately change their career path in front of our eyes, but Ryan Tannehill's good. Like, I'll get the stat a little bit wrong, but I think in his last 14 starts, he has something like 34 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. I mean, that's elite. That is, you know, you are a fringe MVP candidate at that point. So we just have to admit it. We have to step back and just say, whatever happened in Miami is just done. And he found the right situation. He's become a top end quarterback in this league, and it, good for him, because that's really cool. It's really a fun story if you step back and think about it.
At Yahoo Schwab is where you can follow him on Twitter. Frank, always appreciate this. Thank you.
Absolutely, appreciate it.
There he is, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports.
So it's time for Dolphins fans to really move on, and Tannehill is the real deal. Hey, I mentioned in my power rankings, 35 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, essentially in the last 2 seasons.
Yeah.
That's damn good. That, to me, is not a fluke.
Well, it really is part of being a sports fan, though. Like, you have a take on a player or a coach or a general manager, like Jim Benning. You know, we talked about him in the first segment, okay?
Yeah.
I think anybody looks at the first few years of Jim Benning here in Vancouver and won't have many nice things to say.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to be fair about it, but, you know, the first few years, and you look at the resume, the moves made, and everything that's there, not great, man.
First 18 to 24 months?
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good. Last couple of years, it's been a lot better. So there's got to be a little bit more of a balance there of how you evaluate that general manager and the job that they've been able to do. First impressions, they matter. Like, it's hard when you've seen something and you believe in something, when that idea is planted in your brain, you've got to go real deep to try and break that thought process. And that's where we are with Ryan Tannehill. We all watched him with Miami, stunk. But the last year with Tennessee, he's been incredible. Been one of the best 5 quarterbacks in the league. Conservatively, one of the best 5 quarterbacks in the league.
The system works, but one thing that I think in sports, and listen, management is different because we're not talking about, you know, physical performance. We're talking about, can they manage the cap properly? Can they make player acquisitions properly? Do they assess talent properly? With players, though, you hope for development. You hope for them to be a better, maybe at reading the defenses or just in general, developing certain attributes. And with Tannehill, we've seen that. With players, you can see that happen over time. Do they learn from their mistakes? And Tannehill, as much as I in Miami thought he was a, you know, a better wide receiver in college than he was a quarterback. Like, there were legitimately, you started wondering that. He's turned that corner. He's figured out what he needs to do with the right coaching to become that player. The player I'm looking at now to make that next decision of how do I become better is Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
Baker is kind of in that spot right now where the Browns have a decision to make before May 2021. Do they exercise that fifth-year option that you get with first-round picks? And if you're in that market right now, Reach, if you are a part of that management team, and don't get me wrong, there's plenty of flaws with the Browns, are you exercising that as of right now from what you've seen from Baker, right? Because you'd be on the hook for about $25, $26 million. They're going to be that team that makes that next decision. And in a little bit here, do you have faith in that quarterback doing something like Ryan Tannehill did? Listen, he's a talented guy, but can he figure it out? That's the question.
We've got Dan in Fort St. John. The Daniel Jones run was like Kraft dinner without ketchup. I wouldn't know.
That's a bad take. Ketchup and Kraft dinner. Can't do it. Can't do it. It's time to grow up. Put some hot sauce on that stuff, guys. Come on, Dan.
No. Dan, like you're bringing up arguments that we tried to put to bed a few days ago with Kraft dinner. Number one, like Kraft dinner should just not be a part of your diet. Unless we're talking about big time emergencies here. Sorry, Josh, I don't mean to offend you.
It hurts a little bit. My stomach hurts more from all the Kraft dinner.
Do you have ketchup with your Kraft dinner?
I used to, not anymore.
Okay. Yeah, and then you hit the age of 10 and you said no, right?
I'm an adult, yeah. That's what happened.
I'm not going to drink warm milk anymore.
Yeah. Like things I would, like grilled cheese, I don't mind. Like a grilled cheese sandwich.
You can be like 87 and eat a grilled cheese sandwich. I'm a huge grilled cheese sandwich fan.
Once in a while, I might, you know, add a little ketchup there. That can work. I used to put
ketchup. I think that's a deep reach.
I used to put ketchup with scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
When I was much younger. But other than that, like, I'm not a ketchup. I'll even have a hamburger and I won't put ketchup on it.
Same. Like, I'm more of a mustard.
Don't need it.
No, don't need it. But grilled cheese and ketchup? Nah, man. Tomato soup, like, you make that happen. Get a chili going if you want. Throw some hot sauce on there. Yeah, hot sauce is central to my life.
Yep.
Ketchup, no. I got no room for ketchup in my life. Don't want it. Don't need it.
The fill in the blank up at Sportsnet 650. The Daniel Jones run was blank. Keep answering it, and we'll keep answering or shouting you out here on the People Show. Reach deep with your submissions on that. Also coming up next, we've got David Pignota. Lot to talk about with him. The NHL draft lottery, will it be changing? Especially now that the Canucks are not rebuilding anymore. Interesting. That's next. Here, your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Reach Deep with Dan Riccio and Randy Chanda.
Two o'clock in the final hour of Reach Deep here this week. A shortened show with you here on a Friday. Get you ready for game three of the World Series tonight, Randy. 5 o'clock here on Sportsnet 650.
Wonder if it's going to be a real baseball game or it's going to be the computer nerds winning yet again.
The bullpenning.
No, Walker Buehler's getting the start for the Dodgers, so we know that's happening.
Yep.
But Tampa's going to do Tampa. They always do Tampa.
Tampa's going to do something funky. Charlie Morton on the mound for the Tampa Bay Rays. And that's looking ahead to 5 o'clock tonight. Going to take over your... I mean, there's not much else going on sports-wise. That's your Friday night.
I was actually paying attention to my gambling, you know, app.
Yep.
And Mexican baseball. I was actually this close to betting on Culiacan. It was a 10.5.
Culiacan.
The spread was 10.5, and they won by like, I think it was 9.5. They won by 10, so I screwed up there. I was this close to betting on Mexican baseball.
All right. So
times are tough.
You're getting to degenerate levels of gambling.
Times are tough.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of soccer on this weekend. The Borat movie's out tonight.
That's right.
Actually, it came out yesterday, a little prematurely. I was able to get a little sneak peek in at that.
Okay, you've been you're on Prime. You got, yep. Okay, I might watch that this weekend, actually. There's, other than the World Series, there's nothing going on, and the weather doesn't seem like it's going to be all that great.
No, not really. It is going to be an interesting weekend, and we'll also be able to find out if the Canucks do go down the buyout road after they came to terms with Jake Virtanen yesterday. It is Reach Deep, the People Show here on Sportsnet 650. Let's bring in our next guest. He is David Pignota of The Fourth Period. Follow him on Twitter at The Fourth Period. What's going on, Dave?
Oh, it's a lovely day here on the East Coast.
I heard it's like 25 degrees. Okay.
It is. Yes. It's 25 and then it's 9 tomorrow. So,
and when you're under 10 inches of snow in December, we'll call you from the palm trees here on the water in Vancouver.
Oh, don't put that hate on me, man. No. Can't do it. Can't deal with that. Not this year.
Tell me, are we going to have hockey on January 1st, or what's the deal here?
It's still a realistic target, according to one of the high ups at the NHL that I've spoken with earlier today. Doesn't necessarily mean it will be the 1st, but it is still considered a realistic timeline for them to get going, as is an 82-game schedule. Again, there's so many variables in place here. It doesn't necessarily mean that that will be the ultimate outcome. But according to a couple people that are directly involved in this decision-making, Jan 1 is still a realistic target, as is a full 82-game schedule. We'll see how things progress over these next few weeks. I would imagine by mid to late November, they want to have everything ready to roll at the latest. But it's still something that they're considering or eyeing in terms of a realistic target.
Well, Dave, you know, a lot of the discussions, and I'm a big fan of this as well, that whole idea of making the beginning or opening night of the new season extra special, whether it's Lake Louise, yeah, or doing something outdoors. We've heard, you know, various potential targets. Is that okay? Lake Louise, it seems like, is out of the picture because from a technological point of view, it might not be all that, you know, doable. But is that still on the radar? Are they going to try to make this extra special with a game like that potentially when they do start?
They want to. They absolutely do. And it's going to be, you know, a made-for-TV sports event is how it would be kind of categorized. So they want it aesthetically pleasing. They want whatever they can incorporate into the broadcast. They want to, you know, put all the bells and whistles on this to kickstart the season. And it may not necessarily be one game. It may be two or three that take place over the course of the day on, let's say, Jan 1, as an example. It could be, again, the 8th, the 15th, or whatever. But they could have multiple scenarios where it's a full day event. And that's something that they're considering. There's a few options, but they absolutely want to make a splash in terms of a, again, made-for-TV sporting event to create as much buzz as they possibly can to the kickstart of the 2020-21 season, which will effectively just be 2021. But that's what they want to do. That's what they're aiming to do. There were too many obstacles with respect to Lake Louise, but they are looking at different alternatives. I'm not definitively sure what they are, so there's no real point in speculating to this point, but at least Lake Louise gives you an idea of where their mindset is at. Now they just have to find an environment that works, makes sense, is aesthetically pleasing, and can, contain whatever type of broadcast they want to incorporate into the mix.
The draft lottery, it's changing again. I mean, can these guys just make up their mind and stick with something for more than a couple years?
Well, that would be nice. But, you know, maybe too many teams are slipping Gary the old under the table deal. And, hey, get me a top three. I don't know exactly how that works, but just kidding, of course. But yeah. That's what, you know, some things kind of leave a lot of people to believe. So, of course, that's not the case. But they want to try to create something that's a little bit more fair. They changed it after Edmonton got 19 first-round picks in a row, and or first overall. So they want to change it again to give teams that actually are, you know, well, crappy, the best odds at winning the lottery. Now, of course, there are the obstacles with regards to tanking and all that jazz, but I think, you know, you can look at Detroit, who probably should have had a top three pick at the very least the last two times or 2 years, and just, you know, just missed out. So we'll see how that progresses, but it certainly seems like there's water there, and you know, we'll find out what the ultimate outcome may be. But at least there were positive talks with respect to the potential of altering yet again the draft lottery system.
David Pignota, the fourth period, joining us here as he does every Friday at 2 o'clock. So Jake Virtanen gets signed by the Canucks yesterday, and now the focus is towards a buyout, which they can perform over the course of the weekend. But it's only Brandon Sutter or Louis Erickson that are the most likely candidates. Do you get the sense the Canucks will pull off a buyout here?
I mean, it's possible. It's certainly last resort. They've been trying to find a home for at least one of these guys for a while, but you know, they're faced with the same internal dilemma that Tampa's faced with, that the Islanders are faced with, that a few other teams are faced with, and that's, you know, where do they draw the line in terms of what they're willing to incentivize a team to take on a big contract? You know, the money for Louis Erickson isn't too bad, but the cap hit is obviously significant. So, you know, you've got to take that into account. What team is willing to take on a $6 million cap hit for what? What's the incentive to do that? And while a lot of teams thought it was going to be a second-round pick, that just hasn't been the case. And teams are asking effectively for a first-round pick in order to do it. Look, the New York Islanders, after they traded Devon Taves got for 2 second-round picks to Colorado, they anticipated utilizing at least one of those to flip with Johnny Boychuk to take on his $6 million cap hit for the next two seasons. The money owed on his deal is only $5.25 million over the next 2 years total. So the money actually isn't that bad. It's the cap hit. And apparently teams have turned around and said, okay, well, we want a first round pick. And that's delayed the process on the island. So now here with Vancouver, it's a very similar situation. And same thing that's been going on in Tampa. You know, Tampa thought that maybe they'd be able to at least secure a draft pick in exchange, a decent draft pick, a second or a third for an Alex Killorn or a Tyler Johnson. And no, that's not the case. You got to add to those guys to take on the remaining years on those contracts. And it just hasn't worked out. Vancouver's faced with the same dilemma. If, you know, Jim Benning can maneuver some kind of deal, he'd love to do it. Otherwise, yeah, the next 48 hours or so are going to be potentially stressful in terms of what they want to do from a cap perspective.
Oh, for sure. And from a buyout perspective, it's also, you know, yep, writing that check, but then down the road, you're going to be hit with that penalty as well, right, for a Brandon Sutter buyout. So are ownership groups willing to do that? And, you know, potentially GMs, do they want to live with that penalty down the road? Because Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson got to get paid as well. How do you set up the team for long-term success? Speaking of which, though, you know, you talked about how teams are maybe unwilling to take on that salary without a huge incentive. Part of the reason also is that if you're going to pay guys, there seem to be some great names still on the market. And the premier name right now is Mike Hoffman. What's the latest with him?
Continuing to weigh the options and coupled with standing his ground. You know, teams have turned to him and said, look, we'll sign you to $3.5 million. If you join us right now, as an example, and she's going, no, there's no chance I'm signing for 3.5 when I know I'm worth at least 5.5. You know, teams are going to him saying, look, we want to sign you, but we've got to clear out money. So for Hoffman, for Granlund, for Vatanen, Holla, Hamonic, et cetera, some of these guys are going to have to be a little bit more patient if they want to get the number that they feel they're comfortable with accepting. It's not going to be the number that they originally entered free agency with. It's going to be lower. But they don't want to go too low, you know, or they're going to, you know, miss some serious dollars here. So they understand they're worth they're holding their ground. But teams that have interest in them, that are willing to pay around or at least within the ballpark of what he's looking for, which I believe is between $5.5 and $6 million on a 1 year deal, they've got to be able to clear out the additional space. So he's going to have to wait a little bit. It sounds like some of these guys are willing to be patient and have at least relayed that message to the team saying, hey, look, we're going to wait this out. And from a trade perspective, you know, for some of the teams that are looking to move out these big money contracts and are holding firm on not adding a first round pick to the mix. Well, some of these other teams may say, you know what, we're just going to wait until camps get underway because you've got to get close to the cap. You have to be under the cap or directly at it by the first day of the regular season. So you might get into desperation mode then. You know, some of these GMs are sitting back saying, we've got like 2 months before we realistically have to be there. If we have to wait that long, so be it. And other GMs are sitting there licking their chops going, yeah, we'll play that game with you too and see where it goes.
Granlund, Athanasiou, Duclair, like are all these guys having to reevaluate their earning potential for this year even more than they already have?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think guys like Athanasiou and Anthony Duclair are kind of, you know, in a position where they may have to bite the bullet. They may have to sit back and say, okay, I'm going to take a one-year deal at 1.5 reprove myself all over again and go to that. I know Duclair came out swinging for the fences right out of the gate, asking teams for term and some significant AAV dollars. And teams just looked at him and said, take a look at what's going on in the marketplace. It's just not going to happen. So there may be a scenario where they may have to turn around and say, okay, well, I'm going to have to bite this one and take a $1.5 million deal and go from there and prove that I'm worth $3-4 million plus. And it's a tough situation for those particular players because they're kind of those bubble type of players. We don't know exactly what they're capable of just yet. We've seen glimpses, but then we've seen the wheels fall off within the same season. So a lot of teams are a little bit more skeptical and weary of giving out decent dollars for those types of players, especially with, you know, the scenario that we're all in without the salary cap going up, and teams that are also looking ahead to saying, well, if we're going to have a season and it's going to be, you know, January through July for a full cup run, we've got to prepare for potential additions come trade deadline. We've got to create a bit of a buffer space ourselves. So do we want to give this player 2, 2.5, or are we going to have to stand our ground and say 1.5 is the best I can do?
You're listening to Reach Deep. We're joined by David Pignota of the Fourth Period. Dave, there was a signing today. The Leafs re-signed Travis Dermott, who, you know, will give you about 50, 60 games the last couple of years, and his point totals have been in between about 15 to 20 points. But it was a $874,000 deal. Is this the defenseman doing the team a solid, saying, I understand your cap situation, but I want to get paid maybe, you know, as a Kevin LeBanc scenario where they're going to look out for him next year?
Man, for his sake, I hope so. Because that was a deal that surprised a hell of a lot of people. You know, with the AAV being under $1 million, under 900. It could simply be that type of scenario. You get a handshake type of deal saying, we will take care of you next season, or we're going to have to find you a new home where they'll be able to do that. You can prove yourself then to them, because all of a sudden the Leafs have a lot of depth on the blue line. You can argue how good that depth is, but they got a lot of it. And it's, you know, there's only so much space and so much ice time to go around. So I would imagine that his camp has definitely done the Leafs a bit of a favor in this regard. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, with how small the hockey community is, I'm sure the Leafs will reciprocate next offseason, but for now they certainly lucked out. And I would love to have been, you know, listening in on how that conversation would have gone, because it's certainly an interesting eyebrow raiser of a contract.
So you're going to get to sit on the couch, put the feet up, watch how bad your Cowboys are this weekend? I mean, things are kind of drying up from a hockey perspective.
I got to tell you one thing. If the Cowboys lose to Washington this weekend, it's over for me. I'm going to – no more football. I'm going to start reading again.
Knitting.
Self-help books.
Yep.
It's not going to be good. As sad as it is to say, this is a must win for the Cowboys against Washington, and it's so pathetic. if anyone's listening and can play defense in some capacity, please go down to Dallas and help that team out, please, for me.
You might need to try it, Dave.
Yeah, we'll.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll play one down, and then I'll be on the IR.
We'll be watching at the fourth period to see you yelling at Mike McCarthy on Sunday.
Oh, this could be more than just Mike. Gary's going to get it.
Can't wait. Thanks, man.
All right, take care, guys.
There he is, at the fourth period, David Pignota.
He was so happy for that entire 15-minute conversation. Yeah. Then you bring up the Cowboys, and you just ruin his weekend. Ruin his weekend.
Feels like a lot of people are envious of me right now, Randeep.
What? That's what happens when you're not loyal. Everybody else is loyal, Reach.
I mean,
Josh Elliott Wolf's a Vikings fan.
They see how upset I was as a Miami Dolphins fan.
No.
And then I make the switch. I'm like, screw this. I'm done. I'm done with this terrible ownership group. I'm done with this terrible team. I'm done. I can't take it anymore.
You're a phony. Hey, this guy's a great big phony.
Hey, I don't appreciate you editorializing behind the board,
Josh. I very much appreciate it. You've won me over after that Dmitry Kulikov breaking news thing. I appreciate it. You never really loved if you're willing to leave it. That's my theory. You never loved the Miami Dolphins because if you're willing to leave,
yeah,
it ain't the case. Like it was never a true love, Reach. You were disloyal to begin with. You were a fake fan to begin with.
I don't appreciate that sentiment. But I'm saying, I look around the NFL right now. Poor Josh, his Twitter timeline on Sundays lamenting the Minnesota Vikings is about as sad as it gets.
Yeah, I blocked him.
It's like...
That's fair.
You see Dom sometimes. Dom, like, when Dom watches the Jets, it reminds me of Owen Wilson in Wedding Crashers. When he's like, he's at home reading the self-help books and Vince Vaughn is trying to save him. And he eventually goes to see Chaz before coming out of it. Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
It's Chaz. Sorry to break it to anybody who hasn't seen it.
I've watched the movie recently.
But that's Dom. That's Dom, trying to figure his life out as a New York Jets fan. Giants fans last night watching Daniel Jones trip all over himself. Being like, really? What are we doing here? What are we really doing here? Everywhere I turn, there's fans, quality fans, loyal fans of really bad football teams just totally down and in the dumps because their football team gives them nothing back in life. And just, you don't have to put yourself through that. You don't. Trust me. It's not worth it. It's not.
You're gloating now. But wait until your Seahawks, which they're your Seahawks now.
Oh, what? When Russell Wilson retires?
No.
At least a decade before I worry about
this. Wait till they sign Antonio Brown and they start imploding left, right, and center. Just goes to hell immediately.
I will not appreciate
then
it.
Then Dan Riccio is going to be walking around with a powder blue Tennessee Titans hat around Vancouver and saying, I love Tannehill all of a sudden. I love Derrick Henry. Mike Vrabel, my favorite coach. That's going to be you in, I'd say, maybe a month. 90 days, all of a sudden, you don't even have the Titans in your top five in your power rankings. You're going to be walking around with a hat pretty soon. Antonio Brown will ruin your Seahawks if they sign him.
You're a coward and a phony, jumping on whatever team you think is good. Dan doesn't even watch football on Sundays. Wow.
I actually recognize that number.
Oh, it's the number of the devil, 666. It's got to be Andrew Walker.
It's when Andrew, noted Reach Deep hater, Andrew Walker, speaking of which, isn't he a Lions fan now?
Yeah.
Like, who? He can't say anything. He went from, you're bad.
Yeah.
Like, you're not good. You went from AFC East to NFC West.
Yeah.
He went within the division. He pulled a Ryan Giggs. You can't do that.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
And if you get that reference, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. It is Reach Deep here on Sportsnet 650.
Tough transition there.
Yeah. Did the best I could with it. It's time for our NFL Locks of the Week. Can we get a little music, Josh, in the background? I know we didn't really plan for this, but there we go.
We good.
I finally got a win, Randy. I know you're perfect. Don't sit there and gloat
4-0.
With your 4-0 record, picking every prop there is known to man.
It's the same. 4-0. Undefeated.
This guy picks overs on props every week, and he's just money. It's 100%. He never gets it wrong.
Hey, it's about making money. It's about easy money.
That's what we're trying to do. We're the people's show. We're trying to help people make some money.
I've been helping.
People helping people.
I've been helping people make money. You've been losing them money. Except one week.
Not last week. Last week I was on the right side. And it pained me, but it went up against Bic and one of his Bic Six. He had the Panthers. I had the Bears. And the Bears pulled it off. They beat the Panthers last week. And I finally got in the win column. I'm 1-3 now in our NFL Locks of the Week. We give them every Friday here on Reach Deep, the People's Show. And Randeep is 4-0. So, you having honors, go ahead. What's your pick for the week?
Okay, and this isn't going to count for the record, but I went on the under yesterday with Boston Scott in rushing yards. It also sure. won. All right, so
tell us after the fact.
I'm just saying, you can check my app. I bet on the same things that I give those locks out there. Okay. I'm not a fool and a fake in that regard. But this week's lock, it has to surround the Dallas Cowboys because I don't know if you've noticed, but they suck. They're not good. Their defense is trash. Mm-hmm. Washington's not great either, but this game could see some points. Antonio Gibson, who's been picking up of late, he's been scoring touchdowns. But I'm focusing on the receiving yards with him. It's at 22.5. I think J.D. McKissic and Antonio Gibson are going to pick up yards. Kyle Allen is their quarterback. He's not going to be taking shots downfield. He's going to look for those checkdowns. And guess what? Both of these running backs are going to see their fair share of passes from Kyle Allen. The Cowboys give up yardage. They can't tackle at all. They're not good defensively. We've seen that. Give me the over on Antonio Gibson at 22.5 against that Cowboys defense. Take it all day, every day.
Okay, I see your pick for Antonio Gibson, and I will raise you. I will go with the Dallas Cowboys -1 over the Washington football team. I know nobody is betting on the Cowboys right now other than me, but this is a bet on talent. We all know the Cowboys have more talent than the Washington footballs. Zeke had a terrible week last week, but Zeke is going to bounce back. He's going to have a big week. He's going to really just dominate the possession. I think they'll keep their defense off the field.
Not fumble.
As much as possible with Zeke and the run game. Alleviate some of the pressure on new starter Andy Dalton, of course, who will have his feet under him a little bit more in this his second start in the place of the injured Dak Prescott. You're right about Kyle Allen on one thing. He doesn't take shots downfield. So the Cowboys' piss-poor defense and not being able to defend the deep ball, well, Kyle Allen isn't going to be able to take advantage of some of the Cowboys' problems on defense. And if there's one thing they can do, it's get to the freaking quarterback. And guess what the Washington footballs can't do? Defend their quarterback. So Kyle Allen going to be in some deep trouble when it comes to Sunday and the Cowboys D. I think this is a no-brainer. This is the public, and we know the Cowboys are a very public team, but the public could not be more out on the Cowboys because of how they've played the last couple of weeks. This is too short of a price. The Cowboys are going to win comfortably, and you get them at -1 against the spread. Give me the Cowboys as my lock of the week.
I should note here, preseason picks, the Cowboys were Reach's Super Bowl favorite. So there yes. might be a slight bias here. Maybe he's just willing them to win here. I'm just saying, Reach, when you're 4-0, I can
this
make
is,
that I can make
that
allegation.
This is too short of a price. Come on, it's too short of a price.
Just saying, Andy Dalton, that defense, the Washington footballs, should not be able to win this game, but Kyle Allen, all of a sudden, watch him turn into Dan Marino, just chucking the ball downfield. Anything could happen against this Dallas team.
If you want some soccer picks, I threw some out at @DanRicho_ for the weekend. El Clasico coming up tomorrow in La Liga. So check that out there. And, of course, the NFL Locks of the Week every Friday on Reach Deep.
And the text that we thought was Andrew Walker, apparently it's not. It says, it's me, Mrs. Iglesias. Oh, thank you for the text, Mrs. Iglesias. Apparently, it's not Andrew Walker.
All right. Coming up, we will reset our fill in the blank and close up our Canucks topic for the day. Plus password at 2:45. It is Reach Deep, your home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to Reach Deep with Dan Riccio and Randeep Chanda.
It is Reach Deep here on Sportsnet 650. Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. Final segment. Now, this show really flew by.
It flies by when you're having fun. Yeah. And we got a short show today. That too. Forgot about that.
Coming up after 3 o'clock, Mrs. Iglesias and Satyar Shah.
Oh, Sat's got a good co-host today.
Yeah, a good co-host. That's, I mean, you'll have to tune in to find out.
Come on, Walker's the standard. Mrs. Iglesias will do fine.
I just go by what I see on the text line. That's it. Anyways, it is Reach Deep here on Sportsnet 650. Tune in at 3 o'clock to find out what's going on. Mrs. Iglesias is Andrew Walker.
Yes, he's trying to text in under an alias of Mrs. Iglesias, just so you guys know.
Which nobody quite understands, except him. So we started off the show with a talk around the Canucks, and it fired up the text line quite a bit in that, you know, kind of questioning how the moves are made and the processes of going about making those. And I will admit, for me at times, it does feel like the Canucks make moves in a vacuum, like only thinking of one move at a time. Like Nate Schmidt, great. Like third round pick, okay, yeah, that's great. That we'll take that. And yeah, that's a universal win. You get a great defenseman for pennies on the dollar. But things like, you know, sticking with Brandon Sutter through the entirety of his contract, and maybe now you'll end up with a buyout, but, you know, does ownership want to fork out that dough right here and now? Why not think about, because everybody knew it was a mistake pretty early on in the deal. Why not explore something earlier to try and make the best of it or get out of that when you have the chance, rather than sticking with it in hopes that it's going to work out? Like a lot of times when you do something in life, when you make a decision on something, yeah, get a pretty good sense pretty early of whether or not it's going to work out, you know? And it just feels as though this management group is a little too hesitant to bail on mistakes.
Well, let me... Okay, take it back, though. Brandon Sutter came to Vancouver because the Canucks said, Nick Bonino, you don't necessarily fit here. You came in that deal for Kessler. You brought him in as a second-line center. Didn't really jive. And they brought in Brandon Sutter as a result. What happened to Nick Bonino after? Nick Bonino goes to a very good team in Pittsburgh, is a third-line center, and he turns into one of the premier checking centers in the league.
Yeah.
So for Brandon Sutter, he was supposed to be that answer down the middle. Looking at it now, of course, that's not what happened here in Vancouver. But before you explore bailing on that, two things have to be, you know, there for you to answer to first. First is, have you tried to fit this player into multiple situations? With Brandon Sutter, injuries came up, and I'm not trying to excuse the Canucks of that contract, but you try to make it fit in multiple positions if you can. The second thing is, do you have depth? Up until this past season, 2019-2020, Reach, they didn't have an answer for third-line center until Adam Gaudette came up and showed in camp that he can be that guy. Prior to that, it was a barren wasteland of centers. It was. So before we talk about how could you not bail on Brandon Sutter, let's go back in time to look at what was actually here. And recent memory shows you, Nick Bonino, it was probably an example that's still in the Canucks' mind of saying, maybe we gave up on that guy too soon. We didn't necessarily see where he fit maybe elsewhere in the lineup. The biggest knock on him was he's not Ryan Kessler. He can't be Ryan Kessler. We got him in a Kessler deal, but he can't play second line center. He goes to another team and is a excellent third line center. So they were trying to learn from their mistakes there. Problem is Brandon Sutter's injury history and his fit on the team wasn't as good. And they didn't have any depth behind him to move off of him. So while I get taking risks, you have to protect yourself at the same time. It was a barren wasteland of centers behind Sutter at that point.
And look, it is tough. But it's more about like taking risks, you know, and even sometimes it feels as though the optics of something are a big reason why the team is making decisions. You know, Erica Branson, you make that trade with Florida, comes here, injury problems, doesn't pan out, not the player you thought he was when he was drafted third overall. The game was different than it is now, and as it's evolved, it's, you know, lessened the value of a player like Erica Branson. And so you lost out on that trade. And everybody knew that they had lost out on that trade. And still, they went forward and gave him a contract extension. And they kicked the can down the road. And they found a trade partner to take him on, and they come out looking better on the other side with Tanner Pearson. And it worked out. But how many times has that really realistically happened? Even now with Virtanen, and this is how it came up, and just Jim Benning mentioning, well, he could still hit 25 goals, and I don't want to give up on that player too early and watch him do it somewhere else. I mean, we have a pretty good sense of where Jake Virtanen is. They might commit to him now in the top six, and maybe he'll hit that. I still have my doubts. I still have my reservations. But you can't just live in this world where every player on your team is going to hit the ceiling and you can't trade that player or move on from that player because you're not going to get the value of where you think their ceiling is. Like, that's not how the game works. And sometimes I feel like the Canucks get stuck in that because they're worried about the optics and basically admitting their mistake on whatever trade or signing that they had made in the past.
But if you're looking at the situation right now, over the last 2 years, the GM has to look out for their job, right? So let's go back and look at Steve Yzerman in Tampa Bay. He makes a move, gets Sergachev from Montreal. They give up Jonathan Drouin. Great job of basically saying, all right, we're not gonna stick with this player anymore. But a key component there in Tampa Bay was that they had depth in the forward group. They had a lot of guys. Losing Jonathan Drouin, addressing a weak spot on that defense, smart move. You're getting rid of a player that is a very good player, but you have depth. That's one thing the Canucks don't have. So being afraid to make that trade, if you're chock full of prospects, if you've got young guys coming up from the AHL and junior that give you other options, reach. Risks are fine. You move off a player that's got 18 goals based on that fact. But where the Canucks are right now, you can't do that. You can't have her. Even the last 2 years, we had the same conversation around Alex Edler. And you brought this up of at some point, you have to move off of him. You did, you know, when we were debating the merits of an extension.
Yeah.
And I was at the point that he's still your best defenseman. You can't move off of him. It's a risk to keep him around because he's getting older. But at the same time, if you have an expectation within the organization that you want to get near the playoffs, your team is not as good without an Alex Edler, Chris Tanev, and I would argue, yes, Brandon Sutter's contract the last 2 years has not been good, but if you're trying to move him early when they'd traded for him, even a year or two after picking him up and saying this is not jiving in the right way, he was still one of their better players. The problem was he wasn't healthy. And if organization's mindset is we need to have meaningful games, reach. I don't know how you can justify that sort of risk when the baseline, you're not meeting it. And even now with Virtanen, you're taking goals off this roster. Where are they coming from is my question.
It's, you're looking at it from a floor perspective. You're looking at putting the team, the best team out possible each and every year. And maybe that's the core of this issue. Is that in the entirety of the Jim Benning era, they were trying to put out the best team possible each and every year. And that's nice, it's great, but it's hard to build a team for the future, stay flexible for the future when you're trying to do that. And that's why the Canucks find themselves in this spot. Just a quick thought. We talked about the buyout, and it does feel like the buyout is maybe unlikely this weekend. However, when we were talking to David Pignota, he did mention Anthony Duclair and Andreas Athanasiou might be guys that have to settle for taking 1 year, $1 million, $1.5 million types of contracts.
Essentially the Derek Brassard deal from last year. That was $1.2 million on a one-year deal.
I mean, look, my ears perked up at that. I would happily take either one of those players at that kind of money.
And that's why I didn't necessarily think that $3 million number we discussed yesterday was realistic, because looking at what the financial...
Athanasiou scored 30, like he had 27 even strength goals in 2018-19 with the Detroit Red Wings, who were awful. That's why it's hard for me to believe that he's less than a $2 million player at this point.
Mike Hoffman, as per Dave as well, is getting offers of $3.5 to $4 million. If this is one of the guys in the last 2 years has 65 goals, is a power play specialist, is one of the few snipers in the league. You might not like his overall game, but if he's getting deals or offers of $3.5 to $4 million,
yeah.
Reach, Duclair, Athanasiou, they're going to get $1.5 million. Probably that ceiling. Nobody's going to pay them more because Dadonov, 65-point guy, mm-hmm. who's been playing consistently in the top six, got a $5 million. Like he worked out pretty well for himself, if you think about it. But if he's getting those deals, there's question marks with Duclair. There's question marks with Athanasiou. They have reputations of, are these guys complete players? Can you win with them? Are questions that are being asked. And in an economy where all of a sudden...
Nobody's got money.
$3 million. Unless you're Ottawa or Detroit or New Jersey that wants to hit the floor, even they're not spending that sort of money.
It's wild. But yeah, I mean, it almost feels like, well... I'm sure those players are waiting to see what happens with Hoffman, waiting to see if teams are able to move money around before committing to something. And also, if you're going to commit to a deal like that, you're going to make sure that it is the best possible scenario for you that you can actually have success on a contract like that, right? Where it's like, okay, I'm taking this hit here, but I better make sure I'm putting myself in a situation where I can have success. So that makes it a very difficult conversation, but both of those players, Duclair especially, but even Athanasiou at $1.5 million, I mean, that seems like a home run of a risk for me to take, especially if you're the Canucks looking at bargain basement prices.
From a player's perspective, especially those guys, where they're going to see – you know, what's the best fit? The Canucks are one of the teams now. And we, listen, I criticize what the top six looks like right now, especially at the wing position. You know, Jake Virtanen in that top six, does it make sense? Not for me. But if you are Duclair and you look at that, you're saying, all right, I might have a competition against a Jake Virtanen. If you're picking teams, that's probably, I think, advantageous for a Duclair or Athanasiou or even a Mikael Granlund who can say, wait a second, I might be a favorite if I sign with this team. And if I'm going on a one-year deal, that might bump my numbers up. And then we do this thing all over again next year.
It is Reach Deep. Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. It's 2:45, so you know what that means. It's time. It's time. It's Password Time is a game where we give you clues and you try to figure out who it is we're talking about. Password, the game show that is absolutely, positively, despite what Mrs. Iglesias says, sweeping the nation. You love to play it for pride. You love to play it for prizes. Randeep, tell the people what they are playing for today.
You're playing for nothing.
Oh.
But there is a prize next week on Password.
Ooh, stay tuned. Prizes coming for Password next week. For now, you play for a steaming pile of nothing. But you do play for the love of the game. You play to get into producer Dom's top five of the power rankings. 604-280-0650, 1-888-275-0650. Randeep, what is clue number one?
The first clue is free agent. Free agent.
All right, your second clue is 2010. 2010.
The third and final clue before we go to the phone, 604-280-0650. Holy, holy.
All right, there is your first three clues. Let's go to Rager. Rager, what you got?
Is it Lewis Hamilton?
No! Okay.
It is not Lewis Hamilton. It's a nice guess, though. Next clue, Randeep.
Stop it. Please.
Okay, sorry.
That's just a terrible...
Sorry, not sorry.
Terrible.
Would you like some tea and crumpets?
Our friend, Luke the bartender, who who does have an English accent.
Big Blackburn Rovers fan, yeah?
Yes, an actual one is going to probably curse at you next time he sees you because of that terrible, just terrible accent. All right, the next clue.
I thought it was pretty good.
No, stop. Just stop. The next clue is Achilles. Achilles.
Travis is up next. Travis, what you got here on Password?
I don't know. Deshaun Jackson.
Oh, Travis.
Nothing. You lose.
You know what? It's a good guess. It's a good guess, Travis. I know you weren't so confident in it, but it was a decent guess. Next clue.
The next clue is 88. 88.
All right. Chris in Surrey. Chris, what you got?
Ooh, I'm going to... Brian.
Nice job, Chris. Dez Bryant is correct. Wow.
I wasn't expecting that. I was getting ready to put the next clue out there. Chris, salute to you. That was an impressive, impressive pass.
He did the very not confident, I don't know. Dez Bryant?
And he was ready to hang up.
Yep.
Ready to hang up. Shouts to Chris on that one.
Nice job, Chris. Dez Bryant is correct, signing with the Baltimore Ravens on the practice roster. I guess Lamar Jackson needs some people to throw to because the passing game is not working out so well.
Not great.
All right, Dez Bryant, the answer on Password. All right, first clue, Randy.
The first clue was free agent because he was that before he signed with the Ravens.
2010 is draft year.
Holy, because he played for the New Orleans Saints in 2018. Get it, Saints?
Yep. Achilles, tore his Achilles in 2018 in practice.
88, his number.
After that, we have Texas, born in Texas, played for the Cowboys.
Ravens would have been the clue. They're considering signing him after he made it to the practice roster.
Wide receiver and the catch. Famous catch versus Green Bay that the NFL ruled no catch, only to later call it a catch. Honestly, Dom, like that's a deep reach of a final clue. If we would have gotten there, the catch, that's really gonna tip you towards Dez Bryant as a final clue.
If I'm thinking of the catch,
yeah,
probably not Dez Bryant.
No, you're thinking David Tyree.
Tyree, you're going back to the old Niners days.
Yeah,
right.
The catch, like that's gonna make me think of Dez Bryant. I don't know. Otherwise, nice job, Dom, and more nice job towards Chris.
I like how you just ripped Dom, and I'm like, great job, though. Great job.
I mean, we haven't had enough ripping of Dom this week, I feel like.
I think he would beg to differ.
Shouts to Dom, who is working from home. It is Rage Deep here on Sportsnet 650. No, you can't win. I see that in the text box. Dez Bryant, the Baltimore Ravens, and we've also got Password Extra, where we give you the chance to win a steaming pile of absolutely nothing. Yes, it is steaming. I can promise you that, even though it is nothing.
Stop it, man. Stop.
Okay, sorry. I will. Password Extra, what's the question, Randy?
Today's question. Two defensemen in NHL history have more than 1,000 career assists. Who are they? Name those two defensemen.
Answer at 650. 650. We'll try to get to the winner right before the end of the show. All right. We close out the show with the participation ribbons.
You didn't win, you didn't lose. Thanks for participating.
My ribbon today is going to Daniel Jones. Come on. It's a video clip that is going to live for the next 20, 30 years at the very least. We're going to replay that thing over and over again. At least he got a touchdown out of it. Thank you, Daniel Jones.
I will give mine to the entire NFC East for giving us moments like Daniel Jones last night.
Yeah, the NFC East is awesome. And I'm sure we'll find out more about the NFC East on Sunday with the Cowboys. Going to roll over and take the L in fantasy last week. Hell no. The Reach Deep Fantasy Football League trash talk is legendary and it rolls on. Luckily, in the Reach Deep Fantasy Football League. on the text line. Password Extra has a winner. It's Silver and Black Canuck, who correctly answered that the two NHL defensemen with more than 1,000 career assists are Paul Coffey and Ray Bourque. For producer Josh Elliott Wolf behind the board, Dom Schramati, my co-host Randeep Janda, I'm Dan Riccio. We are Reach Deep, the People's Show, back on Monday at 1 o'clock. Up next, Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, with the program on Sportsnet 650.